Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Howdy there, Marky Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How's
Frankie
everything?
Frank. What's going on, man?
Nothing. Went out last night. Did a little roaming
around.
You went
out? I can't believe it. That's so unusual for you.
I got out of a tasting in Manhattan about 7 o'clock.
And I got this phone call. Yeah, Mark, how are things over there? Are they under control? Yeah, Francis, they're fine. Good.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, exactly.
I'm not coming back.
Going out.
But I walked out, and right in front of me where I walked, I was at the Marriott Marquis, and there was Spamalot. And sometimes, you know, getting tickets for that's a hard ticket to get. You go way in advance, unless you show up the day of, and you can often get tickets the day of.
A lot of
and
people turn in their tickets, yeah.
I thought, all right, I'll, and I thought, you know, 40-year-old man going to see Spamalot alone, I should find another 40-year-old man or woman who grew up with Monty Python, and you want to be able to laugh about it. So, okay, not going to Spamalot. So I walked around the neighborhood, and I saw the Caine Mutiny. And David Schwimmer is in the Caine Mutiny.
Which, if you remember, was a movie with Humphrey Bogart way back when.
And was a play as well by Herman Wouk.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, that's sort of interesting and politically salient and makes some good points. And I like David Schwimmer, you know. And I said, all right, well.
And Tim Daly's in it. He started a show next door to us.
That's right, of course, Tim Daly. Big shout out if you're listening. anyway, so I thought, well, I'll go see that. I'll see what else is around. And I walked up to the Caine Mutiny, and I got tickets, no problem. And there wasn't a line in front of the Caine Mutiny. And I'll tell you something. The play was great. And there was serious acting going on. It was about serious issues. And they had a mostly full house. But the show with the Muppets, Avenue Q, line around the block.
Because, you remember, if you go see the Caine Mutiny, 2 tickets. You go see the Muppets?
No.
6 tickets.
No. Avenue Q is that people use hand puppets. It's a very adult play. Like,
yeah.
It's not for kids.
Oh.
But there are Muppets in it. Okay. Okay. The line around the block. All I'm saying is I saw that and I thought, oh, America, what's happening to you? and then also I saw 3 Days of Rain was also in the same neighborhood. That's the play with Julia Roberts,
mm-hmm.
where the review is basically... Started out, the New York Times review was, I'm a big Julia Roberts fan, and I enjoyed this play because I got to just look at Julia Roberts for a few hours. Acting, not so good. But.
You know what?
What?
I got to tell you.
What?
I love Julia Roberts.
I do, too. I do, too.
What's not to love?
She's beautiful. She's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Not just beautiful. One of the things about Julia Roberts, and I think the reason she keeps playing the same character, is because I think that's her character.
Yeah, I agree. And she seems great.
Yeah.
Okay? But. Not exactly Broadway at its finest. You know, not worth flying from Japan to go see Julia Roberts in 3 Days of Rain, which is sort of an okay play that isn't acted terribly well, according to most reviews.
Who cares?
Full line around the block, okay? Spamalot.
I would have been in the Julia Roberts line.
Line.
No doubt about it.
Around the block. And the Caine Mutiny, which was great, and the most serious piece of theater in that area, I just nobody cared. It was like, anyway, so I went and I saw the Caine Mutiny. I thought it was terrific. On the way out, and I'm not used to this. I don't find myself on Broadway a lot. And I do different things. I'm a nocturnal individual by nature, but I avoid lines and crowds. And
well, and you're usually not around at 8 o'clock at night, so you're usually going out after that.
Well, no, this was after the performance, but rarely am I in Midtown Manhattan in the theater district at 11 o'clock at night. Usually at some little hideaway cocktail bar or off Broadway.
Have a sign or a door.
Right.
It's a little curtain that you walk through, and all of a sudden you're
give
in
a secret
Tibet.
Handshake, and you're in.
All of a sudden you're in Tibet after you go through the curtain.
And I do like to go to off Broadway places. So I'm more likely to be at a play somewhere in the East Village that is, you know, in a loft somewhere with
you are much more the off
folding
off.
Chairs.
You're much more the off you know? Type.
Yeah, I am.
No doubt about it.
And I like, but I walked out and I was amazed that outside the Julia Roberts, the stage entrance, you know, you wait for the stars to come out to the limos. I mean, Mark, it was mobbed. There had to be 10,000 people, 5,000 people.
Are you serious?
They were off both sidewalks and closing off the street. They had cops on horseback pushing people back onto the sidewalk.
Just to get a glimpse of Julia Roberts.
To get a glimpse of Julia Roberts walking to her car.
She's awfully pretty.
Sheesh.
I don't think she's that pretty, though.
You know, this is a whole part of culture.
I don't want to be part of a mob scene.
It's a whole part of culture that I just don't get. But anyway, Caine Mutiny, New York City, Herman Wouk, great performance. Check it out. Spam a lot. If anybody wants to go with me, give me a call. I have no friends. I don't want to go alone. Did we see the Times? The Amanda Hesser wrote this cute thing in the Times.
It was very cute.
She's come up with some new words. One is locavore.
Well, one of them is not a new word, but
well,
go ahead.
Locavore. A coinage combining local and omnivore, a subset of activists who eat not just politically, sustainably, and seasonably, but locally. All the foods they consume should be sourced within a 100-mile radius of where they live.
This is my favorite part of her definition where she uses it in a sentence.
Here's her sentence. She says, locavores are fine and well in Berkeley, but up here in Bismarck, they'd end up eating hay.
you want a potato, Bill? Yeah, a potato. Okay.
What else you got?
What do you want on it?
More potatoes. Another potato. This small group has a grand purpose. They're supporting local agriculture as well as fighting the environmental ramifications of a truckload of Klondike bars being shipped across the country.
And you know what? I'm making fun of that. But anytime you can eat locally, we encourage it.
And these people are doing it to make a point. They're going to an extreme. And some people are doing this locavore stuff. Like they'll pick a week or a month and they'll say, you know what? For the next month, I'm not eating anything that doesn't come from within 100 miles. Now, that means you can't have coffee or tea. You know what
right.
I mean? So there's
right. And Francis and I touch on this a lot, and I want to clarify because some people I think have thought we're a little bit more granola-esque than we are. And that is, yes, we want to focus on those things. Yes, if I would much rather have the apple from
New York State
than from Washington State, especially, and I'd rather have the apple in season than out of season. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to drink coffee. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to have the cool tea from the Maoli Mountain Range in Taiwan or try an interesting fish that might be indigenous to Hawaii on occasion.
Yep.
It's a lifestyle. It's not a life.
Well, and we look to support our local producers. That doesn't mean we don't eat anything from anywhere else. But what these locavores are doing is very often they're doing it, as I said, for a week or a month to focus for themselves and to help learn about and teach about what is your local produce. What should you be supporting locally? The other term Amanda Hesser came up with in the Times was a gastropreneur. A gastropreneur is like one of the handful of top chefs like Thomas Keller, Ferran Adrià, and Yves Camdebord who've expanded their financial horizons. No longer satisfied with lucrative deals to open 3-star restaurants and 5-star hotels, they've started buying their own inns. Like, here's the sentence she uses it in. That Ducasse is such a gastropreneur. Next thing you know, he'll launch Air Elaine.
I guess that makes us gastropreneurs with a radio show, with restaurants
show?
And a radio
it's
show.
True. It's true.
We're there. And Amanda, we're gastropreneurs. Thank you.
We have the book left or right. But I saw, by the way, that Charlie Palmer is planning on building a house. He's a great guy and has a restaurant, Oriole, out in Las Vegas, as well as Orioles elsewhere. And Healdsburg Hotel is his first hotel venture. He's planning on opening a serious hotel with his name on it, the Charlie Palmer Hotel or the Palmer Hotel in Las Vegas.
It's not a hotel. It's a skyscraper.
It's big. So we're going to look for that. We'll have to get Charlie back on the show. Hey, listen, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Annie Waite. She is executive chef at two restaurants in New York and two restaurants in London, Nicole's and 202, both restaurants with the same name, one in each city. And her book is Keep It Seasonal, Salads and Sandwiches by Annie Waite, Soup, Salad, Sandwiches by Annie Waite. It's a book about seasonality. It's a cookbook, but it also has sort of a philosophy behind it.
Now, welcome to the show, Annie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Now your whole book, and it's a pretty massive and beautiful book, is all focused on seasonality. Will you talk to us about seasonality?
Yes, it's really about using local products. In the restaurants, I tend to work with a lot of farmers and small artisans to showcase the products that they're producing and really let those products shine. And the food is not super complicated. It's really about showcasing the flavors of the food.
What do you think people do, home cooks do, when they get a beautiful local stuff? Do you think they can overwork it and lose what makes the ingredient special itself by burying it in technique?
Yes, but not just home cooks. I think a lot of chefs do that
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
I never forget going into a Michelin star restaurant in London and having, it was wild boar with roasted root vegetables, and each vegetable had been cut into a round and then stacked one on top of the other into a pyramid shape. And as I ate into each one, I had no idea what they were. You couldn't tell which was the parsnip, which was the carrot. And for me, I love to keep, especially vegetables, in their natural shape as much as possible so that, you know, you can identify what it is.
Rather than have just an amalgam of turnip, parsnip, celery root
stuff,
carrot stuff.
Which doesn't really, you know, they all taste the same. It doesn't mean anything.
You know,
whereas I would rather focus on maybe one or two of those vegetables and letting them take center stage on the plate.
Do you know what's interesting? I remember, and it was most clear to me when the first time I went to a restaurant called the Lane Ducasse in Paris years ago when it was in a place other than it is in now. And it's something that our chef really tries to work with and that I see as a true mark of quality. You know the old medley of vegetables sort of thing? Well, sort of. It's often more just like a yelling of vegetables. It's not really like a medley of different songs.
Cacophony of vegetables.
We'll call it.
Yeah.
And I remember I went to Ducasse, and there was an assortment of spring vegetables on the plate. And yes, it was. It looked like it had all been in the pan together, and maybe they were all in the pan together for a time or not. But each individual vegetable had its own taste and
character.
was articulated, and I think that gets lost sometimes, that each thing should taste like itself, and they can work together, but each thing should taste like itself. Is that something you strive for?
Absolutely, and I think people often make the mistake that, especially when they're cooking at home, they always grab that expensive bunch of asparagus to impress people that are coming around for dinner. And I think, you know, then they masquerade it in sauces and what have you, and you really just lose the flavor of what it is. But if it's not going to be in season, it's not really going to have much flavor, and that's really the theory behind Keep It Seasonal.
Now, Annie, your book is called Keep It Seasonal. Do you find, you have restaurants in, or you're chef of restaurants in New York and London, do you find that there are differences in what you have to buy for each of those restaurants?
Yes, and also... In England, I've got Europe on my doorstep, which there's an abundance of things to use from there. And obviously in America, you don't have European stuff, but I have all sorts of other things that I've never seen before, like all different kinds of chilies coming from Mexico and what have you. So, and also the seasons don't always tally with one another. As soon as August is finished in England, September the 1st, winter has arrived, if you've ever had any summer, that is. And
right.
then, whereas, you know, in New York and Jersey, summer, often the ingredients from the summer go through to the end of September.
Do you find that consumers react differently in the United States and England to seasonal produce or to the inavailability of some produce in some seasons?
I think in London and, well, in England and in America, people are shopping in supermarkets, and I think all supermarkets offer you so much choice that I think that has probably deadened our senses to the seasons. So I think it's pretty similar, whether it be in England or America. But one interesting thing, when I first came over to the States, the owner of the restaurant sent me to America to sample... to see what Americans were eating, and he said, you can go absolutely anywhere in the States. I want you to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and report back for a month. So I spent some time on the West Coast in L.A. and San Fran, and then came over to New York, and I think I could see much more of a difference between the West Coast and the East Coast than you actually saying to me, what's the difference between England and America?
Really?
I think the people on the West Coast were much more in tune with ingredients and were wanting to know what they were eating, where it was coming from, or how it had been grown. Whereas in New York, my initial response to eating out here was people were much more into the wow factor of restaurants and the bars and the hipness of the place.
Well, that's because you got to be trading your bonds.
Well, we'll be back talking with Annie White about her book, Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salad, and Sandwiches by Annie White. And we're going to talk about the differences between restaurants on the West Coast of America, restaurants on the East Coast of the United States, and restaurants in London, and how we stay seasonal in all those different places. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Annie Waite. She is an executive chef of two restaurants in New York and two restaurants in London, 202 and Nicole's in each city. And her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. Annie, we were talking about cultural differences, East Coast, West Coast, England, which you have a tremendous knowledge of. I find that people are still somewhat reticent to stop buying tomatoes in January around here, even though some of the best tomatoes in the world come from Jersey in season. But the idea of why would you, you know, I go to restaurant menus and they're, you know, if a tomato is supposed to be on that dish, there's a tomato on that dish, even if it's a pale, flavorless, watery nothing, because people demand tomatoes on their hamburger. Do you think that people are more resistant to the idea that some stuff just isn't available some months of the year in one place or another?
I think people have lost any idea of what the seasons are. When I first started to write the book, Keep It Seasonal, I asked a friend of mine who is a smart person, when is apple season? And she just looked at me with a blank face. Do apples have season? And I think
the ones that come from trees.
I think that's the case across the board. So many, because of supermarkets have done such a good job at providing us with so many choices, I think people really don't realize that vegetables and fruits have seasons.
Right. Almost all the apples in the world are grown during a 6-week period.
Isn't that crazy? But they keep remarkably well. So that's, you know,
keep well, yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's sad, really.
Well, you know, with the apples, I don't quite mind as much because apples in season are, I mean, that is one of the few fruits that really does hold up fairly well. But,
yeah.
You know, strawberries. I mean, how someone could not see the difference between a California strawberry that's picked ripe and shipped, unripe and shipped across the country and is white in the middle, doesn't taste like anything.
It doesn't taste like a strawberry. I guess that's the point that we're trying to get across here, is not only does it not taste good, it doesn't taste like a strawberry.
Yeah. It might taste sweet even, but doesn't taste like a strawberry. But and you live in Jersey. We're about to come into strawberry season. Where are you going to get some of those most remarkable strawberries you could possibly find? But I think people are becoming more and more aware of the seasons. And actually, we're going to come back after the news and talk more with Annie Waite about her book, Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. And we're going to talk about you keeping it seasonal out here. We're entering a great season for food in Jersey, the Garden State. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Annie Waite. She's executive chef of 202 London, 202 New York, and Nicole's in London and New York. She's executive chef of those four restaurants on two continents. And her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. Now, Annie, in talking about keeping food seasonal, one of the ways that I try and sort of infuse enthusiasm into the our guests and into our dining room, and I actually use it as marketing, but it's not just marketing for me. I think it's the way we look at life, and in time that I've spent in a lot of European countries, it's the way that a lot of people look at life. People mark the passage of the year by the arrival and departure of various foods. Like, it's morel season now. You know, strawberries are coming. Mm-hmm. You know, when the first ramps arrive, when the first asparagus arrives, I mean, for me, when the first local asparagus comes in, that's an excuse to go grab a bottle of Muscat and grab my friends and have lunch that day of just asparagus.
And I don't want to bemoan what's going out of season. I want to celebrate what's coming into season.
But do you see it as do you think we can return to a cultural area where, or a cultural condition where people mark the seasons by the arrival and departure of fresh food?
I think it's tough, and I think that was the main reason why I did keep it seasonal, was to really shout about these ingredients. There's nothing better than waiting for that first, some warm tomato. I think, you know, you already talked about tomatoes and strawberries. To me, they're the absolutely the epitome of the summer, and yet you see so many people eating them in the winter. But when they're eating them, what are they actually thinking? Do you think they're enjoying it?
Yeah,
do they actually engage their brain with their stomachs?
Because they're just not that good.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, whether just people eat for the sake of eating its fuel.
They're not
really caring about what they're actually eating.
I think it's the idea of the strawberry, and it's the idea of I've got this recipe that calls for strawberries, and that's how I'm going to make
but
it.
But I'd rather eat a fresh carrot than a hothouse, greenhouse strawberry that was picked 3,000 miles away. I mean, I just would.
Okay, so Annie, you've just written the book. What are the foods that mark the different parts of the year for you? What are the things you look for, the highlights of your year?
Asparagus, because mm-hmm. there's so many things you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes is absolutely my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can do so much with tomatoes, but you don't need to add things to them. You can just keep it very, very simple. I have a tomato salad in the book, and I'd just like to slice them and add some extra virgin olive oil and some sea salt and let the sea salt encourage all the juices to come out of the tomatoes so the tomatoes just sit in this bath of their own flavor. I just think that is absolutely fantastic.
And now there's so many different varieties of tomato that you can get, so many different flavor profiles, so many different textures for so many different uses.
You know,
yeah, I love the heirloom tomatoes.
They were
such a wonderful eye-opener for me when I came over here, as we don't have them in England.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different colors and shapes, and I just think they're fantastic.
Well, and I think another reason that the tomato is for... I say tomato, you say tomato. Let's not call the whole thing up. But I think another thing about the tomato or the tomato is that it doesn't do well to refrigerate, and it doesn't continue to ripe. If you pick it early before it's ripe, it's not great. And if you pick it ripe, you better eat it soon.
And it bruises very easily
if it's a good tomato.
Right?
It's one of those things where if you grow tomatoes in your backyard or you go to a restaurant at the height of tomato season, it's a rare treat. We actually have an Italian restaurant that we just opened up, and we've contracted with a farmer to buy a couple of tons of tomatoes, and we put up our local... Because, you know, the way to preserve a tomato, it's not the same as eating it's not the same as eating a tomato fresh. But if you make preserves, if you put up fruit that you buy in the supermarket that's mediocre fruit, you're going to have mediocre preserved fruit. But if you harvest and then, you know, like we do, we you know, have nine cooks putting up 2,000 pounds of tomatoes over the course of 5 days,
yeah.
That's what we make our tomato sauce from all year round. So we have Jersey-based tomatoes in our tomato sauce in our Italian restaurant all year round. The difference is incredible, you know?
We just need to get people to do that at home.
Well, you know, and I think that having a home garden, and Mark and I have talked about this so much, when you have a garden at home, even if it's so that you can snip just, you know, a basil plant in your window box, so that you can snip some fresh basil for your sauce, absolutely makes a complete difference, both psychologically and in what things taste like.
Absolutely, and yet it's very difficult, obviously, for people living in New York. They don't have gardens, but you're right. You can have a little window box and put things in. I don't have a garden here in New York, but my window is full of herbs, and it's fun.
Absolutely. Now, okay, so we talked about this summer. We talked about tomatoes. For the rest of the year, because people around here seem to think that, sometimes that, you know, the seasonal produce is, you know, it starts in May and it's over in September. What are the things you look for? You know, apple season is in the fall, actually, and pears are in season in the fall. But what else do you see coming around to mark your year? What are your highlights?
I love pumpkins. And I love to roast lots of autumn vegetables. And I like to make them into a salad and roast them with maple syrup, and lots of different kinds of onions as well, and cut them so that they keep in their natural shape as much as possible and get them lovely, lovely golden brown color. And also I like mushrooms. Of course, you've got lots of kinds of mushrooms to play with in the fall. And then in winter, of course, you've got all the citrus fruit, which to me is really livens up winter. And the sad thing for me when I was shooting citrus photographs for the book in Florida, I couldn't even get a glass of fresh orange juice.
Why was that?
I just couldn't find fresh orange juice anywhere, wherever I was.
In Florida?
Hotels, yeah. You go for breakfast in your hotel, get a glass of fresh orange juice, no way.
Yeah, no. It's true, though. I mean, I spent some time in Florida as
well.
Yeah,
I don't go there.
And you just, it's a carton. If you want fresh orange juice, go get the carton.
In Florida?
In Florida, yeah. Where you could pull the orange, there's an orange grove in the backyard. You could go and pick 7 oranges, make yourself a great glass of orange juice.
We make a screwdriver with fresh orange juice behind our bar, and they don't do it in Florida. That's amazing to me. I think that, for me, mushrooms, morel mushrooms in the spring, truffles in the fall, I think those are great marking the seasons. And I also think that when you eat seasonal...
When some truffles in the winter, too, of course.
When you eat seasonally, the foods seem to make sense with the seasons, because as it gets darker sooner and as it gets colder outside, if you switch over to root vegetables in the fall, there's something about those vegetables that tastes like the fall.
That's when I switched to bourbon, too, Francis.
Yes, exactly. You go from gin to bourbon when it gets cold outside. I mean, do you think there's a natural human affinity that those foods taste better in season because of where, you know, how we react to food in different weather ways?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, some of the recipes in Keep It Seasonal aren't necessarily just products that are available at that time of the year, but they do evoke that image of you know, it's cold outside and you want something warm, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, and the thing is about, you know, heavy, weighty stews and cassoulet is not exactly, you know, the beginning of bikini season what you want to be eating. You know what I'm, you know what I mean? It's
absolutely
about...
Absolutely. It all makes sense. Yet we seem to have gone away from that.
You know, no season, though, do I look good in a bikini.
Yeah, that's a fact.
When I first started out in the business, I worked in the Hilton Hotel in London. And I think that was when I first learned about seasons and the hotel season. Well, there really was only one season in the hotels, and that was the season everybody got whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a guest wanted summer berries in the heart of January, their request was met.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that seems such a backward way of thinking. And it wasn't long before I left the hotel industry to search for more seasonal-oriented food.
When you buy a cantaloupe and it's hard as a rock, what's the point?
It's still a cantaloupe, but
barely orange.
Our guest today is Annie Waite. Her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. She's the executive chef of 2 restaurants in New York and 2 restaurants in London. She flies back and forth all the time, and boy, her arm's tired. Sorry, it's a terrible, terrible joke. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're fired. Get out.
You can't fire me.
I can't. Get out.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys.
Maybe we'll be back. He's fired.
Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi. This is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. I forgot our restaurant's name there for a moment, Mark. Our guest today is Annie Waite. Her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. You should pick it up. And if you want to pick it up, we're going to put a link. It's a big coffee table book, and it's very pretty. It's great photography, which I find very helpful in books like this because presentation really counts.
Because you can't taste it.
You can find a link to that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and you can also find out about Annie's restaurants in New York, and if you're taking a vacation, you can go out to London. Now, you know, Annie, one of the things you talked about that you say was very important is you talk about making your own mayonnaise. Why don't I just go get a jar of Hellman's?
You tell me.
All great restaurants make their own mayonnaise.
Hold on a second.
All great restaurants make their own mayonnaise, but I think people at home may not realize.
That was a lob, Annie. I'm not going to get the Hellman's. I'm not giving you any more lobs. Okay, why do you say people should make their own mayonnaise at home?
Well, I think shop-bought mayonnaise does not taste very good, and if you actually make your own mayonnaise and compare it with shop-bought mayonnaise, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And also the process of making mayonnaise is not as complicated and difficult as people think it is.
And inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly. I always make mine in a mortar and pestle, mm-hmm. although I know not everybody has a mortar and pestle. You can make it in a little food mixer.
Mm-hmm.
But just that action of working the egg yolks in the mortar and pestle and adding the oil to it is very satisfying to me. And it really is very easy to make. I think once you've made it a couple of times, you won't turn back.
And you know when you I thought that when I read that in the book, I thought that's a brilliant way to take your food at home and when you make a fresh mayonnaise, it's alive, you know, and 4 days later it's not alive, you know.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then I think whatever you're serving with mayonnaise, the mayonnaise becomes a real part of the dish. Then,
exactly.
Just a dipping sauce on the side.
And it's so easy to flavor it and so easy to add things into it, whether it's roasted garlic or whether it's chives or whatever you want to put into it. Saffron, whatever you want to put in your mayonnaise.
But if you want to take your sandwich at home and really, like, people won't know what's so great mm-hmm. about it. The difference between smearing some fresh-made mayonnaise, which isn't that difficult to make, and store-bought mayonnaise, that's a great secret weapon because people be like, this is really good, and not even know why.
You know, your horseradish mayonnaise at home, buy a little piece of horseradish grated into the mayonnaise. So simple and spectacular.
Yeah.
And
pour it over roasted potatoes. That's delicious.
Oh, I totally agree.
I'm hungry. See what you did to me?
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, another thing that you talk briefly about is you talk about foraging for food. You talk about wild food, food that's not grown on a farm and cultivated specifically. Talk to us about foraging food or foraged food.
Well, I have a very interesting gentleman in Wales, in the UK, that forages for wild food all over Wales and Ireland. And he actually picks all these wild roses, and then he counts all these petals and puts them into a bag and then mails them to me to London. And I use them for all sorts of things, whether it be salads or for garnishing or whatever. But I'm not really trying to tell everybody you've got to go out hunting for food, but it's really to encourage people to go out, and if you see things, start foraging. It's fun. You see mushrooms out. You see wild flowers. Pick it. Why not? It's fun.
As a kid, my grandmother used to make zucchini flowers, and she used to egg them and fry them, and they were one of my absolute, wonderful, absolute favorite foods in the whole world. So much so that I would make her pick the flowers that were also going to become zucchinis if we hadn't picked them, because I like the flowers better.
Hey, now, Annie talks in her book about, and I do recommend the book, and you can find a link to it on our website, using flowers in the summertime as a garnish. And that's something that it's very expensive around here to buy flowers in a market very often. Mm-hmm. But if you use one of the green markets, especially one of the green markets in New York, like Union Square Green Market, a lot of those farmers will just pick up the flowers and put them in a box, and they're not that expensive.
Nasturtiums are really inexpensive and a very pretty way to garnish food.
But they're not inexpensive in a market because mm-hmm. they're so perishable. But if a farmer is going to a farmer's market, sometimes he'll just pick up a bunch that day, and boy, there's nothing that dresses up a salad or a dish, both from a visual perspective, and they also have flavor.
I agree, but it's not just about the visual aspect of it.
I agree.
I think a lot of flowers taste fantastic.
Yep.
As you said, nasturtiums, that's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. They really add a pepperiness to salads.
You know, I'll tell you, we had it.
When they first see the flowers on the plate, people often pick them up and put them to one side, which to me breaks my heart.
You know what happened to us just this year? We opened our second restaurant this year. It's on the second floor, and it's surrounded by Japanese cherry blossom trees, right?
So
the trees were in full bloom, and the blossoms were just starting to come off, and we hadn't yet put the screens in the window that we put in the summertime. And we opened all of the windows, and the wind was blowing. And if you're around downtown New Brunswick, when the cherry blossoms come off the tree, it's like a snowstorm mm-hmm. of cherry blossoms. And the blossoms were blowing into the window in a beautiful summer breeze. And it was gorgeous, you know. And I had just read a piece in the New York Times about how chefs were using cherry blossoms as ingredients and garnishes to sort of bring in the season. And this cherry blossom blew in, and one landed on the gentleman's plate, and another on his fish, and another one landed in his martini. And he said, "Excuse me, this has landed in a martini." I said, "No extra charge for that, sir." But literally, it was like in a film, you know, the cherry blossom blew off the tree and onto his martini as a garnish. And I thought, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. What's your problem?
Why are you complaining?
It's not a fly, sir. It's a cherry blossom.
That's very fresh. It just blew off the tree. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to be talking just for another moment or two with Annie Waite about her book, Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. And just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Annie Waite of Nicole's and 202 Restaurant in New Brunswick, in New York City and in London. New York City is a little city next to New Brunswick. That's how you can find it. And her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. Annie, tell us about your restaurants in London and New York. Now, how do you manage being executive chef of four restaurants on two continents?
Well, fortunately, I have a head chef in each place that I completely trust. Otherwise, it would be impossible. I think I spend most of my life actually on an aeroplane than I do actually on the ground. But it's interesting. There's no time for me to get bored.
Yeah, I'll say. what's the theme of the restaurant? What's the mission of the restaurants, of the two different restaurants, Nicole's and 202, if we want to come visit you in New York?
202 opened last year. It's a cafe. It's an informal cafe. But our theme is brunch. But we do brunch throughout the whole day, every day. So it's not just at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicole's is all about ingredients and just simple food, but food that's full of flavor and is very, very bright, vibrant, and
Nicole's has an interesting location. Why don't you tell us about the location of Nicole's?
The location is on Madison, just off Madison. It's on 60th Street between Madison and 5th. It used to be the old Copacabana Club.
Mm-hmm.
And the kitchen itself is on a raised platform, which used to be the stage where Louis Armstrong used to perform.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
That's pretty all right.
You're performing on Louis Armstrong's stage. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to put up on our website links so people can buy your book if they want to, and they can find Nicole's in London or New York, and they can find 202 in London and New York, and you'll see us there sooner or later. We'll turn up. Thanks for coming on the show with us,
Annie.
Annie.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's been super. Her book is Keep It Seasonal, Soup, Salads, and Sandwiches by Annie Waite. We suggest you pick it up, and it is morel season. We're coming in on strawberry season, and it's time to go out to your local farmer's market. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.